Welcome to Routines and Ruts, the podcast exploring the ebb and flow of our daily lives. I'm your host, Madeleine Dorr, a writer and person who's also navigating the messy parts of life, work, and creativity, and sharing insights with you along the way. To wrap season two, I wanted to share some of the lessons that most resonated with me in my conversations with artists, researchers, activists, and people that I admire. My hope is to collect comforting reminders for myself to take into the new year, but I also hope that there'll be a comfort for you too. Before I do, I wanted to share that I'm working on something a bit different at the moment, a bit big and exciting, so it might be a bit quiet on the podcast front for the next couple of months. In the meantime, I will be sending my occasional newsletter with links to what I'm reading, poetry that I love, quotes, snippets from the interview archive, and other musings. So if you'd like to stay in touch, it's best to sign up there. You'll find a link in the show notes, or you can simply head to extraordinaryroutines.com/newsletter. I'll also be pondering what to bring you for season three. So if you'd like to be notified for when that comes out, it's best to subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen. And I also wanted to say thank you for listening along. It's been a treat to be nestled in your ears and share what I hope has been some inspiration and guidance and comfort. Now, onto the lessons. This time of year can often give me what I call the wobbles. The days before we enter the new year seem to disappear in a blur. Tuesday feels like a Friday. Plans can evaporate, yet at the same time I'm rushing to make resolutions for the year ahead. We might find ourselves swinging between feeling lonely to feeling socially exhausted, bored to overwhelmed, rested to overindulged. And I'm sure for many of us this feeling might be compounded this year. It makes sense that we wobble when we face adversity, uncertainty, or exhaustion. Yet there are also times when we might have our ducks in a row, and yet the internal flip-flop continues. I'm reminded of a quote from singer-songwriter Fiona Apple. She says that people shouldn't have to appear always stable and content because people aren't always stable and content. I think trying to always be stable and productive, balanced and content actually hinders our ability to recognize all that we are. It covers up the range of experiences, of emotions and possibilities if we're just this one perfectly stable thing. And maybe trying to maintain balance amongst the chaos is the wrong goal. As this podcast explores, the pendulum swings between the rhythm and the rut. Even in moments of calm, it might still feel like we're wobbling from side to side. And reflecting on this season, I noticed that the lessons that really resonated with me are all actually reminders that everything ebbs and flows, and that can be enriching, or perhaps more of a reality for many of us than achieving the perfect balance. Many of the conversations in season two, and season one for that matter, really instilled in me that while we live in a linear society with linear schedules and linear expectations of our careers, our time, our emotions, our bodies, we are not linear. We don't move through our days in straight lines. We wobble, tilt, and shift in cycles and patterns. Sometimes those are fleeting, sometimes they're lingering, sometimes they're predictable. Sometimes they're more chaotic. So the first lesson that I took from this season starts with the expectations we have on the body. Perhaps there is no better example of the inherent ebb and flow than the menstrual cycle. In episode 3 of this season, performer and period preacher Lucy Peach delved into the four phases of the menstrual cycle, which she refers to as dream, do, give, and take. The lesson I took was that connecting to the subtle shifts in our bodies can help us embrace being wherever we are. Even if you don't menstruate, perhaps there's something to rethinking our connection to everything that has a cycle. Creativity, nature, life. So here's Lucy on not admonishing ourselves for the different phases we find ourselves in.
When you look at the whole cycle as a whole and you zoom out, and you understand, you know, that we have these hormones and that they really are a part of what makes us who we are and how we feel, then you can learn about the ways that you respond to them And obviously everybody's different and, you know, it's not a one size fits all. There are four phases and four feelings, and there's something wrong with you if you don't fit into those boxes, because we're all just so different, obviously. But yeah, and I think one thing that really bears shouting from the rooftops is that, you know, being premenstrual is such a powerful time. It's such a potent time. And I realized that for a long time, you know, in my teenage years and a lot of my 20s, that I wasn't very kind to myself when I was premenstrual. And, you know, it was only a few years ago where I sort of thought, you know, if you add up all of that time where we're kind of like admonishing ourselves when we're premenstrual, not to say that, you know, you're spending this whole week just hating on yourself, although I know some people do, but even if it's just, you know, low level kind of, I'm not good enough, I'm feeling inadequate, I'm feeling overwhelmed. So you have that, and then you plus, you know, having a period where, you know, there's a whole cultural narrative about, you know, you just got to push through and, you know, anything you can do, I can do bleeding, and you got to keep going and you just got to get done and, you know, nothing can stop me. It's like that's half of your reproductively viable life that you're spending just kind of not being where you are. And, you know, when you think about seasons, you know, night and day and the seasons, you know, spring, summer, winter and autumn, we don't admonish those seasons. We understand that there's a time for everything, and once you kind of dig a little deeper, I think there's just this beautiful opportunity to really understand your flavor in each of those phases and how you can use it, you know. And it's not to say that it's the panacea for all things in your life, and obviously if you've got health issues around your menstrual cycle, then it can just be like, I mean, I'm imagining there's at least 8% of the people listening now who are like, what the hell, shut your face, I hate my period, it's awful. And, you know, that those things can just really interfere with how you feel about your cycle, and, you know, rightly so. But it's just another lens to look at yourself through, and it's just so much richness there.
The next lesson related to rethinking linear time. We pin our routines, schedules, specific to-dos neatly onto 24 hours that we allocate to each day, only for the day to sometimes have other ideas about how it will unfold. The lesson I took from my conversation with Tyson Younger-Porter is that a time-focused routine disconnects us from the patterns of our surroundings. In episode 11, the author of Sand Talk spoke about how, from an Indigenous perspective, time does not go in a straight line or follow a flat schedule. Rather, it's as intangible as the ground we stand on. Here's Tyson on time, routine, and patterns.
I mean, it would take a lot longer to get into what the sense of time is, because it's not exactly a circle. I know that's a common representation of it, but it's not really like that at all. There's no separation between time and place. In our languages, it's the same word. And so imagine if you didn't have a different word for time and space, if they were one thing, what your time would look like, and that would be like that. So if you reimagine what your daily routine would be like, you know, you'd find it's not chaos. It's very ordered and following in that creation pattern, but it's following very much what the landscape is doing in that moment, or it's strongly influenced by it. I would posit that routine is the death of relational cognition or contextual cognition even. It's the death of that. A routine kills that. Yeah.
What's the difference then, do you think, between pattern and routine?
Oh, that's real good. Well, I guess a routine is a pattern, but it's an entropic pattern. I think any pattern that keeps replicating itself infinitely is an entropic pattern that'll break down. There needs to be change. You know, so, I mean, people who know design will know this, you know, that a pattern only becomes interesting and beautiful through its disruptions. And the way it moves, the way it responds and seeks to reassert the pattern, but then you know, the pattern's changed. So when it gets back on track, it's different again. And it's kind of, strangely, it's always a little bit more complex than it was before. And I guess that's how, you know, mutations happen, that happens at the level of our DNA. And it's a continuous thing, you know. It doesn't, I mean, your DNA changes throughout your life. It's fluid. It's this co-evolutionary process responding to information that's coming in from the environment around you. Yeah, it's not completely deterministic, but it is also that as well. And that pattern will seek to reassert itself, but when it does, it'll be changed slightly from the mutation that's occurred.
Adapting.
Yeah.
We can also find these patterns that we experience in our bodies and our surroundings in the universe. In episode 15, astronomer Greg Quick spoke about the Earth's yearly cycle around the sun.
I guess I had that quite powerfully this morning, another recognition of that's what was going on. You know, the Earth had come back around and turned once more, but also on its journey around the sun had shifted. Every day that the Earth turns, we shift a certain amount of distance around the sun, which brings a different set of stars into our sky. And even the journey of the Earth going around the sun, you know, in 6 months' time, we are going to be on the other side of the sun. Now, with the sun 150 million kilometres away, that means that 6 months' time is not just a different time, it's also a different place. And that's a place that's 300 million kilometres away from where we are now. So, you know, there's an actual completely different place that we're in, which I think at being in a different place where we're probably entitled to feel a different way in those different places.
There's something comforting about recognizing not just the place we personally occupy, but our place in the universe. I was really awe-inspired by learning about these biggest cycles that we're a part of, be it the Earth turning each day, the cycle of the moon each month, the Earth's journey around the sun each year. The lesson for me was that it's a reminder to untether from the cycles we plug into, say the news or social media feeds. But also, as Greg said, it's a reminder that we feel different in different places. Of course, nature provides this reminder again and again. There's that inspirational Pinterest post, "If nothing in nature blooms all year, why should you?" Applying the ever-changing nature of seasons as a metaphor for our lives can be a comfort, as it's a reminder that there's a purpose to the lull, or simply that this too shall pass. Maybe some of us needed to hear that this year, but maybe for some of us those words can bring a certain grief. Recognizing constant change also brings a sense of loss for what was, what will never be returned, what may never be at all, or what might come back that could knock us again. For writer and critic Kylie Maslin, storms are a metaphor for living with an invisible illness. In episode 13, Kylie spoke about the watchfulness that comes with navigating her physical and mental health. The lesson for me was that there can be two sides to routine. Sometimes it provides a ballast to get us through and reduce things like decision fatigue, but it can also be a source of exhaustion because of the constant vigilance that can come with it. Here's Kylie reading from her collection of personal essays, Show Me Where It Hurts.
I've come to think of my health conditions as tropical storms. My body, like a sea of warm water, is at the mercy of erratic and unpredictable fronts, the impacts of which are long-lasting and deeply felt. My pain and mental illnesses have triggers, like the thunderstorms that fuel tropical storms. And just as storms have seasons, the triggers that cause my pain or distress come in patterns. I can't prevent them. I can only do my best to soothe this particular cycle until it dies out. Then I look around me at the land that has been flattened and destroyed as if a cyclone has swept across my life. I begin to pick up the pieces and rebuild, but I never lose sight of the sky, knowing the wind can pick up again at any time.
Not only do our bodies experience an ebb and flow, but so do our emotions. In my conversation with psychotherapist and author Hilary Jacobs-Hendel in episode 17, We spoke about working the change triangle to recognize how inhibitory emotions such as shame or anxiety, or our defenses such as perfectionism, are working to hide our core emotions. The lesson for me was that feelings just are, and they flip on and flip off depending on what's happening around us. When we learn to experience and navigate our emotions like anger, joy, excitement, sadness, and let them flow without judgment, we can feel calmer, more balanced, and our confidence can grow. Here's Hillary on what it means to process a core emotion to reach a more regulated state, which might help with the wobbling feelings.
And what it means to process an emotion is to allow yourself to experience it. And what it means to experience an emotion is to be able to, one, know that you're having it, to be able to name it. Okay, right now I feel sad, right? And then to be able to say, okay, I know I feel sad because I can label these sensations in my body. I feel a heaviness in my chest. I feel something behind my eyes that lets me know I'm on the verge of tears. And then the final ability to stay with those sensations of heaviness in the chest or the feeling behind your eyes, just noticing what those sensations feel like with a stance of radical acceptance, compassion, curiosity, and really trying hard not to judge or evaluate the emotion. And when we can attend to that emotion and notice the sensations, it tends to move them through. There's something about attending, giving attention, which comes from the cerebral cortex part of our brain, to a physical experience, which is from the middle of our brain. And it's almost like a surgeon has a scalpel and that's what does their work. Focused attention is what allows the brain to change. So when you bring attention to an emotion, a pure core emotion, and you stay with it, you'll notice things moving. If we breathe and stay with an experience, the emotion will come up like a wave, then crescendo, and then calm down. Similar to the experience we've all had, you know, when you stub your toe and you don't feel the pain yet, but you know it's coming. So you're kind of waiting for the pain to get more and more and more, and you hope you can bear it. And then, thank goodness, it switches and it starts to go down. And that's what happens with an emotion. And we know from, you know, with practice of experiencing our emotions, the various ones over and over again, it's like, okay, even though this sucks and it hurts, I know what this is and I'm not frightened of it. And I know I just have to go through it and I'll feel better. And so when we can experience fully to completion the emotion, we then drop into this open-hearted state of the authentic self. And this is that regulated state where we feel calm and curious. It's notable and marked by all these C words: calm, curious, connected, compassionate, confident, creative. And so that's where we all want to spend more and more time. It's not that we're there all the time. That's impossible. But by working the change triangle throughout the day and over a lifetime, we learn to process our emotions and spend more and more time in those calmer and regulated states. And it also doesn't mean that we don't have an emotion while we're there. So after practicing this for over a decade, I sort of have connection to my what feels like kind of a solid self. And I am also aware when I'm deeply sad and can facilitate my crying, or deeply angry and can facilitate processing my anger and moving through it. But I don't get lost in it. I always have some connection to this kind of authentic self.
What all these lessons show to me is that perhaps perfect order, the perfect routine, the perfect balance is the wrong goal for our days. Instead, it's about listening to what we feel or need, noticing where we are, even if that means in outer space, and making adjustments. This was a lesson from my conversation with Sarah Wilson in episode 7 that really resonated. We can constantly adjust modulate and tilt towards what needs our attention. Here's Sarah on how she has learnt to tilt.
There's this really great piece of advice. So it was given by a psychologist. He's actually a demographer, and he used to do some work for Cosmopolitan back when I was the editor of Cosmopolitan. I think a study had come out showing that the most miserable people on the planet were women in their 40s who were lawyers. Now, extrapolate what you want from that. But he instead went, well, why don't we look at what it is that makes people, who are the least miserable women? And what he found was that it was the women who didn't have rules for themselves, didn't try to balance this with that, didn't try to find the perfect ratio between yoga classes and kids' commitments and work commitments. Instead, it was people who were able to what he calls tilt. In any given moment, they leaned towards the thing that was the most pressing and probably therefore most meaningful thing to do. And, you know, if that meant that, their child needed their attention, they would tilt in that direction and let their work commitments go for a few hours or a day. And, you know, at other times, they needed to tilt towards looking after their own health or whatever. So that's what I think modulating is. It's ebbing and flowing in real time according to what you are feeling and what you need, rather than an external rule of moderation or morning routine or, you know, perfect balance, which are other people's kind of notions, you know.
So maybe we can release the grip we have on controlling our time, our expectations or our output, and let go of some of the rules that we set for ourselves or other people's notions of balance. There's no one routine fits all, no one definition of balance, no one way to go about the day, because we are not one way. As the wonderful late Amy Krause Rosenthal put it, work must reflect the randomness of life with its incessant, merciless, almost humorous bombardment of highly contrasting emotions and experiences. It's easy to mistake any sign of wobbling as a justification for your own weaknesses. Maybe you're about to set resolutions and find yourself a week from now wobbling from them. But what I've come to realize through various conversations is that we all inevitably wobble. We all falter. We are all not quite sure. We keep changing and contrasting. And perhaps instead of striving for balance or for a linear life, we can take the judgment away from the wobbles and remember to tilt towards the ebb and the flow. Thank you for listening to Season 2 of Routines and Ruts. If this episode or any others from the season provided inspiration, guidance, or comfort, I'd really appreciate it if you could pass it on to a friend who might also enjoy it. And be sure to subscribe wherever you like to listen so you can receive future episodes. I'd love to hear if you had a favorite episode or lesson you took from the season, and you can stay in touch by signing up to my occasional newsletter at extraordinaryroutines.com. It's filled with interviews, life experiments, reflections, and inspiring findings. Thanks again for listening to Routines and Ruts, and remember to celebrate the process as much as the outcome, the ebb as much as the flow, the ordinary as well as the extraordinary.